Chef Daniel Patterson is one of the best, truly most thoughtful chefs in the world. He has a bunch of restaurants in San Francisco, and he became famous for dishes like a bowl of grits that's really buttered popcorn, or a rose that's made out of beets. Now, his cooking isn't really vegetarian, but it's vegetable-centric, and his understanding of the flavors of plants is really unlike anyone else's. I sat down with Daniel to talk about his way with vegetables.
So hi, Daniel. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Daniel, I remember the first time I came to Kwa and sat down and had the tasting menu. I was so blown away by the simplicity of it and how clear the flavors were and how surprising the textures were. I remember this really wonderful beet snow with rose and this upside-down tomato tart with these super intense little tomatoes. And, I was so sad when it was over, but I also remember realizing that, wow, after 11 courses, I was counting, and there were only two that had any kind of meat or fish. Are you weaning your guests towards vegetarianism?
I'm hopefully not weaning them towards anything except delicious food. I'm not vegetarian. I love cooking with vegetables, but there's kind of a crossover between what I like personally and what we serve in the restaurant, but it's not 100% one for one. So I don't go in with any kind of agenda except to make people happy. That's my agenda.
But let's talk about the focus on vegetables. What do you enjoy about cooking with them? It seems like you're really inspired by them.
Yeah, it's a great question because, I've tried to think about where did this come from? I didn't necessarily grow up with it and I didn't learn it anywhere. When we talk about vegetables, we're talking about plants. And the whole plant kingdom is so vast. So we work with wild plants. And wild plants, it's like wild sage. There's 100 kinds of wild sage, and the same variety in two different places is going to taste totally different. It's like being a painter. And someone gives you 100 new colors that no one's ever seen before or no one usually works with, your ability to create something kind of fresh and new and to kind of look at the world in a new way is vastly increased. Mm. So what it does is it's like if you think about cooking as a language, vegetables give you a lot more vocabulary than if you're just cooking with meat. Because the fact is that different varieties of meat are going to taste much more similar than different varieties of a particular kind of herb or vegetable.
Yeah. Can you think of a dish that you've served that really makes you think, wow, that really shows something new about this plant?
I mean, what I hope is that, every dish shows a little something. So it's like, I guess one of the things that we try and do is combine familiar and strange in a way that so familiarity is connection to culture, connection to tradition. I mean, food is about people, so we want to keep that connection to other people and everyone. I'm just one speck on a long continuum of cooks over thousands of years, and I want to keep that connection there because that's where the emotional power is. But something new that you haven't seen before, well, that's like the shock of, like excitement, when you combine the two. And for example, the beet dish that you mentioned, the beets basically made into to look like a rose, cut in such a way, very labor intensive, a little bit of aerated yogurt and rose petal ice. Mm-hmm. And the rose petal ice is just made like a tea. It's only 5 ingredients, and so that's the other thing we try and do. And something that I personally love is the challenge of making something with something really humble and making it as exciting as if the customer was getting something really foreign or kind of a traditional luxury ingredient. So to make, let's be honest, to make a beet as exciting as, caviar or foie gras is, it's got to be a pretty damn good beet.
Yeah.
So the amount of creativity and imagination that goes into it, when you're creating kind of a little bit of a limitation, I think limitations kind of force creativity.
Yeah.
What I would hope is like I've just eaten a beet that tastes intensely of beet, and yet the form is different and what it's surrounded with is different and the temperature and texture is not what I was expecting. So I get what I thought I was going to get and then something a little bit more too.
But at the same time, you're also saying, well, one of the reasons why you love working with vegetables is because they add so many colors to your palate. In a sense, they relieve you of limitations or sort of a sense of what a limitation might be. At the same time, you also say you wouldn't want to be a vegetarian, that there's something about animal food, there's something about meat and fish that satisfies you in a way that just plants usually don't. What do you love about those foods?
It's a much bigger conversation around vegetarianism versus omnivorousness, let's just say.
That's not a word, is it? Yeah, just from a deliciousness point of view.
Yeah, no, but I mean, even if you're talking from a deliciousness point of view, because then you're getting into the physiology of how your body responds to animal fats, which is very well. So the perception of deliciousness of, for example, we have on the menu right now, lamb that's poached in oil that's a little bit kind of tinged with rosemary, and then it's at a low temperature, and then it's grilled over charcoal to finish it. And the smell of that is just like mouthwatering. It has its own kind of appeal and deliciousness, and it satisfies a certain kind of craving in a different sort of way. I feel like I could replace that, but the fact is I don't cook in a vacuum, and I'm not cooking for some abstraction of what I think is a perfect meal. Right. I'm cooking for customers, my customers, and I've learned what my customers like and don't like, how far I can go, and what's really important. What I've learned is that it makes them happy to have that one thing, that primal sort of piece of meat, really well cooked, well cared for, like well raised, delicious. But if there's one moment of that in the meal, it's enough. And why, I guess, you know, again, going to this kind of how we're built as human beings, there's something about that plus how we're raised. So our culture is built on animal consumption. So our memory, our taste memories are geared towards craving animal. If we had grown up in a different society, I would be able to cook differently.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
Because if I leave that out, there's one thing to bend people's expectation. It's another thing to break it entirely past a point at which they become disappointed. Because restaurants and cooking, it's all expectation fulfillment. And the thing, the bedrock, the most important thing at Qua that we feel, we're cooking for people. We're not cooking for ourselves. And they would be disappointed if we did not have at least that one moment of a perfectly cooked, aromatic, just really kind of juicy and kind of almost that primal experience kind of piece of meat at one point in the meal.
Yeah.
And so that anchors, in a sense, and allows us to do what we want for the rest of the meal. And it gives us a lot of leeway.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us today, Daniel.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Daniel Patterson's latest book, written with the perfume maker Mandy Aftel, is called The Art of Flavor. And he left us with a recipe for beets, bergamot, mint, and wildflowers. And you can find that, of course, on splendidtable.org.